senior colleagues on this faculty, but I think it illustrates both a lot about, well, it illustrates a lot about contemporary Orthodox Jewry and about why I'm doing what I'm doing in terms of Hilchos Avelos. The individual in question is sitting ship, and one of his balabatim asked him, "What do you use for Hilchos Avelos?" So the person looked at his balabas and said, "I use the Shulchan Aruch." So the person said, "Yeah, when you have something really practical, lemaisa, what do you use?" He said, "The Shulchan Aruch." And then the person asked, you know, a third time, pressing the point, and I guess didn't understand that. No, he uses the Shulchan Aruch. Now, I highlight this because it happens to be true that Hilchos Avelos, maybe more than any other area in halacha, is a situation where minhag oker halacha. But, in other words, there are a number of things that we will learn in Hilchos Avelos that are not done today. For example, amongst practices of the 11 or so practices of Shiva, so today we don't do Kfiyas Hamita, whatever exactly that it is, and we don't do Ituf Harosh. And we'll also see in Hilchos Kriya this week, there was a practice, at least on a parent, and on Nasi and on Abdes and Chacham, to be Choleitz Kasef, to, you know, when you do Kriya, not only do you do Kriya, but you actually bare the shoulder. That's not done anymore. I've never seen that done anymore. I don't think it's done anymore. So there are a number of areas where, despite the fact that Dina de Gemara is very clear, we don't do that anymore. But that said, it is absolutely crucial in dealing with any of these issues that your foundations are solid. And therefore, to me, it's much more important than rather dealing with any single particular issue that may come up is to provide you with the halachic foundations. And then it's very easy to find in the Sfarim, if there are particular things that aren't addressed in the Shulchan Aruch, you know, what the Minhagim are. If you read a Sefer like the Geshar HaChaim, which I recommend, there are two recent Sfarim, relatively recent Sfarim, Hilchos Avelos, that one might use. Either the Kolbo, which was written by, I forget who, is a Rav in Columbus, Ohio, actually, or Greenwald, and the Geshar HaChaim, which is from Eretz Yisrael, mid 20th century. So you will see that even as you read through it and the presentation of the materials, if you know the Beis Yosef already, most in the Shulchan Aruch, you already know most of what's written there. There are certain things that are not really discussed in the Shulchan Aruch, perhaps most specifically things like the Tara process, which is barely touched upon at all, where it's useful to have whatever type of Sefer, but in many of these cases, it's as useful to have an RCA Madrich as it may be to have a Geshar HaChaim. So I definitely recommend it. But what I want your foundation is what the Rechina will focus on as well, ultimately, is your knowledge of, you know, what I'll call Beis Yosef / Shulchan Aruch and Nosei Kalim. In terms of the Sfarim to be aware of, I sent out that people needed, you know, digital versions, but obviously the main Sefer is going to be the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch. A few things to be aware of in terms of Hilchos Avelos. There is no Mishnah and Mishnayos that's dedicated to this, but because there are certain overlaps between Hilchos Avelos and Hilchos Chol HaMoed, so it wound up mostly in the third parak of Moed Katan, a little bit early in the Masechta. There is also one of the Masechta Zutos, one of those Masechtas which is not one of the 63 of relative of Gaonic provenance. I mean, it's probably Bryces and stuff from an earlier period that are collected and printed in the Vilna Shas after Avodah Zarah, Horios. So there is Masechta Smachos, also known as Masechta Avil Rabasi. And those of you who may have seen in the Siman Shin Lamed Zayin already, very often this material that the Ramban quotes or others we show and quote from Avil Rabasi that we don't have in our editions of Avil Rabasi. So we may not have the exact Masechta they had. I mean, it's mostly the same Masechta, but clearly there are parts that are missing. As far as the Rishonim are concerned, perhaps the most seminal influence in terms of Hilchos Avelos is the Ramban's Torah Sa'adam. As the Tur says in his opening of Hilchos Biker Cholim, he basically learned Torah Sa'adam and may add some other things, but his structure for Hilchos Avelos is in fact the Torah Sa'adam of the Ramban. If that very reason, those of you who have done or will do Yoredeya will know that perhaps the most seminal influence on Yoredeya, classic Yoredeya, is the Rashba, because there the organizing principle of the Tur in writing Yoredeya was the Rashba's Torah Sabayis, which goes through Hilchos, most of Hilchos Nida, not everything in between, but basically that provide both the structure and why I would surmise that the most single influential Rishon, no matter what the Beis Yosef says about how he counts Rishonim and how he paskins, you know, two of the big three, the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rush, I'm willing to bet that the most seminal influence on the first large chunk of Yoredeya, in fact, is the Rashba. Okay. Aside from that, obviously the Rambam's Hilchos Avel is found in the last book, in Last Sefer Mishpatim, and I mentioned the Geshar HaChaim. You'll see a number of other Sfarim referred to. I'll confess one Sefer, which I think contains a lot of them in Hagim. some of which may still be relevant, some not, is the Ma'avar Yavok. You'll see it quoted a lot in the Pesachei Tshuva and in the Gesher HaChaim later. One comment about the Pesachei Tshuva, which I still don't know the answer to. You have any number of Pesachei Tshuvas that I will ask you to do. There are two kinds of Pesachei Tshuvas. There are the one, the regular ones, and the ones in brackets. The one in brackets is a later edition. I mean, it's not the, it's part of the Pesachei Tshuva, but someone put that material in later. It's clear from a later date. The Tshuvas L'Chasam Sofer, which may be perhaps the most seminal Tshuvas of any of the Achronim in terms of Halacha, are always found in the later section. So I don't know exactly who put that the later material in, but you'll be seeing the Pesachei Tshuva a lot, and be aware that the distinction between what's in the brackets, what's not in the brackets, is simply what was, I think, in the original edition of Pesachei Tshuva, and then I don't know if he added it later. I'm not sure he was alive to add in Tshuvas L'Chasam Sofer, or somebody added that material in later. Finally, just a comment about Musar in terms of Hilchos Avelos. The Gesher HaChaim talks about this a lot, but I don't think you need to read the Gesher HaChaim to realize this. All of Talmud Torah, obviously, is supposed to have a purpose, not just in terms of providing specific knowledge, but it's supposed to have an impact upon character. Sometimes in studying Talmud Torah, like learning in the Seches Yevamos, for example, and all the permutations and scenarios, it may be intellectually edifying and it may be a mitzvah Talmud Torah, but it's not clear immediately how it translates into how you live your life. But when you study Hilchos Avelos, and many parts of it, but generally speaking, it is a reminder of what Sefer Koheles tells us, which is B'chol Eisiyu B'gadach Levanim. As you start to read about what is done in terms of the process of before dying, during dying, after dying, and throughout the entire process of Avelos, so one always hopes that one doesn't experience it or experience it in the most limited fashion, but nonetheless it's a reminder, a very stark reminder to the reality of life. And the truth be told, in this context here, reading the Gesher HaChaim is more useful than reading the Shulchan Aruch, because the Shulchan Aruch, I don't want to say, it's not that it's sanitized, but a lot of the nitty-gritty is not dealt with, because the Shulchan Aruch was not providing you a practical guide on how to conduct your Leviathanar and how to bury the mace. It's all the dinim that, you know, give rise to, you know, or govern certain specific rituals. But when you read the Gesher HaChaim, it's a much more step-by-step what exactly you do. Even when you will see the Siman Shin Lamed Tes, the Shulchan Aruch tells you all the things you're not allowed to do to a person while he's still the goses, right? But it doesn't actually tell you what to do as soon as the mace dies. And all those things, it's implied in some way by the Shulchan Aruch, read the Gesher HaChaim, and he gives you sort of step-by-step, which may not be all the Minhagim here, but at least Minhag Yerushalayim. But nonetheless, it should have a very strong reminder in learning Hilchos Avelos that Leiv Chachamim Beveis Evel, Veleiv Kesilim Beveis Simcha, I think it is. Okay. Anyway, I'm going to share, I will be reading the text of the Shulchan Aruch. My assumption is that you will have at least seen, hopefully, the Torah in the Beis Yosef, which are the Makoros that I've given you. It's really just a way, if you're having trouble in the Beis Yosef, I've given you the full Makoros separately, and then I singled out some of the Nosei Kalim that I would like you to do. The Shulchan Aruch begins, Hilchos Avelos, really, with Bikur Cholim. The mitzvah Bikur Cholim has a couple of Makoros. In the Gemara, in Sota, it's based upon imitato dei, v'halachta v'drachav, that you're supposed to imitate God's ways, and just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mevaker cholim, as he does in Parshas Vayir with Avram, so too we are supposed to be mevaker cholim. The Gemara in Bava Metzia quotes it from a pasuk in Yisro, v'hodata lehem asaderech Yehuva, that they learn gemilas chasadim and bikur cholim. The Rambam, if I'm not mistaken, in Hilchos Avel understands this really as just part of the mitzvah Havdal Reacha Kamocha. The Shulchan Aruch writes, mitzvah levakar cholim, there is a mitzvah to be mevakar cholim, and I should add that to those of you who will actually be in the Rabbanus, this is an absolutely essential part of your Rabbanus to make sure that this is well taken care of. The Aruch HaShulchan writes about something which is rather amazing, which is apparently in Europe, and I don't know that this still exists today, we have Bikur Cholim societies, but apparently there were chevers that were dedicated to taking care of the mace at night, because the krovim were exhausted from taking care of the mace all day, and he speaks very, very, in very laudatory terms of these people. So as a rav, your responsibility is to make sure that the needs of Cholim are taken care of under the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. The Shulchan Aruch continues, HaKrovim v'chaverim nechnasim yad v'rokim achar gimol yamim. Those who are close come within the first 3 days, if they're not as close after 3 days, but if the person has really gotten really sick, so then one is supposed to enter immediately. I will say that there are a number of dinim here, which the reasons given by the Gemara might not appeal very much to the modern rationalist mind, and they don't appeal to my mind either, but I think in many cases they're actually very valid psychological reasons that the dinim reflect. And the Gemara's explanations may just be another way of spinning those things. So in this particular example, Rav, I think, is the one who says here in the Gemara, the reason why you don't visit within 3 days unless you're very close is kedei lisra mazle. Your mazel shouldn't be undermined. I think that the another way of understanding that, which may really be the same thing, is that when people start rushing to a person's bedside when they get sick, they create a very negative psychological effect, because even people who aren't so close to him all of a sudden come, so he's thinking, oh my God, what's happened? I'm going to die any moment, because after all, why would these people be coming? As opposed to krovim chaverim, who might visit with him or see him and interact with him on a more regular basis. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch continues in Sif Beis, afilo hagadol yelech levakir hakatan. That's what mitzvah sabikur cholam ein lo shiur. Even a gadol is chayev to do a katan. We'll see in Hilchos Kriya that in the discussion of some of the kriyos that we don't do today anymore, korea alachacham, so Rishonim point out, the Gemara points out already, that there may be sometimes you're only mechuyev to tear kriya for, let's say, an adam, for someone who's a chacham, if he's gadol mimcha, if he's greater than you. But in the case of mitzvah bikur cholim, there is no distinction. Even gadol levatar sakatan, vafilu kama pa'ama bayom, if necessary. Vafilu ben gilo. Vafilu ben gilo, here again, I think represents, the Gemara doesn't really, I can give the reason, but it's a psychological issue. Ben gilo means someone who's the same age. And the reason why the Shulchan Aruch says afilu ben gilo is because the Gemara says that if you visit someone who's ben gilo, the same age, who's sick, so you should know till echad mishishim l'chayil. It takes away 1/60 of the sickness. But you have to understand what that means. It's not that you take away 1/60 of his sickness. You get 1/60 of the sickness. That's why you might think that you're potter from having to be mevaker, because after all, it causes some harm to yourself. Now, again, this seems very strange, but the logic is perfectly simple. If you go visit a 90-year-old person in the hospital, and you're 90-year-old balabas, so you do your job, and you express your appropriate emotions and feelings and so on. But kach derech hachayim. But if you're 40 years old or 30 years old, and you're being mevaker ben gilo, who's very sick, you can understand the potentially frightening impact that has upon you as the person. It also has perhaps a positive effect on that other person, because his ben gilo is the person who understands him more, and maybe understands more what he's going through, and therefore he's no to acham yishishim b'cholyo from the chole, but he himself, in effect, carries the burden now of acham yishishim b'cholyo. Okay, for those who were wondering and didn't read the Gemara, having 60 ben gilos visit won't solve the problem. As the Gemara says, it's like Yisuraisa de Be'erebi. It's 1/60 of what's left. Except for, I think, when it comes to this, they don't divvy it up again. Daughters take Yisur Nechassin. First one gets a tenth, the next one gets a tenth of what's left, but eventually they pool the money and they divide it up again. Here, I'm not sure that it works that way. But anyway, so that's what ben gilo is here. And this, by the way, is also very important, also not just for Rabbanim, is the importance of Chevra in terms of people who are suffering. Yes, Adam?
Why is there a Hamid that a Gadol wouldn't be Mevaker a Katan?
Because it may be that when it comes to certain dinim, there's an element. I mean, you might have thought that it's some type of a obligation that stems from called Kavra Briyos or something like that, and you're not, Gadol's not Mechuyev Mechavid Katan the same way. At the end of the day, the answer is that if it's not Piguach Nefesh, it's Abizrayev, the Piguach Nefesh, and everybody's Mechuyev in that. Okay. The more you do, the better, but of course this has to be understood that you don't want to burden the Chola, and a number of the dinim in the Sinan are really work along those lines, that I would frame it differently. Bikur cholam has to be for the needs of the chola, not the needs of the mevaker. And there are some people who don't understand that line. Some of you may have seen, it's obviously a caricature, but there was a YouTube video about the things that people say in a shiva house. So obviously that's kind of humor and whatever else, but it does, firstly, it reflects some reality. And what it does reflect, and you'll see this, by the way, is not relevant to Bikur Chol. In the shiva house, there are people who walk into a shiva house and don't understand that they're not supposed to start talking about themselves. I see this all the time, and it's kind of shocking, because even if you didn't learn the Shulchan Aruch, and even if you didn't know the dinim, you should have enough seichel. But what it stems from, unfortunately, in many cases, is a kind of egocentrism or narcissism, and not realizing what the purpose of the visit is for. So a person is not supposed to be matriach on the chola by visiting too often. It's really for what the needs of the chola are. The Rama adds here, he quotes from the Beis Yosef, and he already quoted from the Ma'ariel, it was the Darkei Moshe, Yeshon Desona Yachal Levaker Chola, that it's okay for a Sona to Mevaker a Chola. The supposed proof text was Gemara Moed Katan, where Rabbi Huda, I think, had put someone in Cherem, and he was sick, and the person came to visit him. But lo, narrowly, the Rama says he doesn't think it's correct. In that case, it wasn't that he hated Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda was going to see him, you know, rejoicing and being happy that he was sick. So it wasn't a problem for him to visit Rabbi Yehuda. But the Ramah says that he thinks that ordinarily, if the Mavaker is a Sone, V'lo nirali el lo yivaker chol v'lo yinachem ovel, shu sono shelo yichashev, shelo yachshov shesameach le'edo v'eino lo El Atzar. In other words, he's going to think that here is his Oyev who's rejoicing over his being sick, and it's going to cause him pain. In this regard, the Acharonim point out, it's inappropriate to do Bikur Cholim or Nichum Avelim to someone who's a Sone, but Halvayas HaMeis would be appropriate since it's not going to cause the Meis any Tzar. I think the Taz also points out it depends upon what it means to be a Sone. You know, it's always a very delicate balancing act between a person whom you're visiting, you know, would cause irritation versus a person who maybe you have a little kakata with, but the mental thing to do, nonetheless, is to show that even though we're not getting along so well, I understand your needs in a time of need, and therefore I'm going to be Menachem Avel. So that's Hakolafi Asina, Ulafi Mashem Selim, as the Shach says in Sivkat and Beis. Okay. The Mechaber continues. On the ground, as the Ramah adds, this din is generally not relevant today, because today, generally speaking, people don't sleep on beds that are on the floor, lying on the floor. They're lying on raised beds, and that's why the Ramah writes, V'davka, kishachol ha-shochev al ha-oretz da yoshev gavo mimenu avo, kishachochev al ha-mita, mutar leishev al kisei v'savsel. It's quoted from the Ran and a number of other Rishonim, v'chein no hagim. Okay. The Shulchan Aruch continues, Sivdalet ein mevakren achola begimel shos vishonu shayom et meisha kol chola meikel alav cholyo vaboker v'lo yochosh levaki shalav rachamim. So you shouldn't visit the first 3 hours of the day, this is the Gemara Nedarim, because he tends to be better, and people therefore won't be mispalo. V'lo begimel shos achronu shayom sh'az machbar al cholyo, and also v'yisiyash melevaki shalav rachamim. He'll also have yeyosh, because he's assumed that it's a lost cause. Then the Ramah adds, the whole should be care of a lo be care of rachem lo kima mitzvah. So here, this goes back to the Ramban and Torah Sa'adam. There are really two functions for Bikur Cholim. One is to take care of the needs of the mace, whether they be physical needs or psychological needs. And the second element of Bikur Cholim, and the Ramban says, I think that if someone wasn't mispala for the chola, he's not yotze the mitzvah Bikur Cholim, certainly not bishleimusa, is to be mispala for the chola. Here, there is a very important Gemara Nedarim. The Gemara says that anyone who's not Mavaka the Chola is not Mispala of Lo Sheyichye V'Lo Sheyamos. And the Rishonim point out here that generally speaking, when you Mispala for Chola, obviously Mispala of the Chola should live. There are situations in which, in fact, that isn't the case, where the appropriate choice is to be Mispala for the Chola, that the Chola should die to ease the suffering of the Chola. Aside from the Gemara Nedarim, there's the famous story of Rebbe and the Shivcha in Ksubas, where Rebbe was trying, since Shama was trying to go out and Talmidim kept praying, the Shivcha went out and dropped a big flower pot and made a lot of noise and everybody stopped praying, and finally Rebbe was able to die. Certainly the notion exists within traditional sources is that not all life is worth living. Now obviously, as we'll see in Sim and Shin Lam Tes, Chas V'Shalom, one is not allowed to actively hasten a person's death. But situations where the hastening may be passive, so those are situations in which sometimes, in fact, it's laudatory to do so. So in this Gemara, the notion is that occasionally a person is mispala shayamos. I remember, actually, that the principal of the high school, Rabbi Talbis, when his mother, Alav Shalom, was very ill, so they had a tillum gathering in our shul, and at the end of the tillum gathering, he led the tillum, and then he said a mishabach, and he said it very quietly, and if I'm not mistaken, you can ask him, but I'm pretty sure that he didn't say the standard mishabach l'cholim, he actually recited a different nusach, which was for, I think, not prolonging a suffering life. So that's a very important general philosophical point to keep in mind, aside from the specifics. Most of the time, you're not going to encounter a situation where people pray for death, but the Gemara, in fact, does entertain exactly that possibility. Okay, now with regards to the reasons that are given, it seems to me these are very mistaber reasons. In fact, they reflect reality. Generally speaking, when you deal with people who are sick, So it happens to be the latter part of the day tends to be the worst time. The body temperatures tend to rise, fevers tend to be highest then. In the morning they tend to be strongest because they often, if they've slept at night, they've had a night's rest, so they're in better condition, and that's the point of the Shulchan Aruch here. Strangely enough, the Rambam here gives a completely different reason. I'm not really sure why the Rambam was not satisfied with the Gemara's reason. If the Gemara had given a reason about Shadim or something like that, I understand why the Rambam would have given his own reason for the din, but the Rambam says because they're taking care of the Tzarchei Chol at that time. So regardless of whether that is the reason for the Gemara, the Musar Haskel is obvious anyway, which is if you know there are certain times that the mace is being taken care of, so then the Chol is being taken care of, so then you shouldn't visit at those times. The same holds true, by the way, you'll see it more often now in Shiva notices when people mention the hours for the Beis Avel, they'll put in hours and they'll ask people not to visit at certain times because the Avelim do need to eat. It's a minor detail. Anyway, the same thing is certainly true for Chola. If they're taking care of the needs of the Chola, that's not a time to visit. All right. The Mechaber continues, Kishu Mevakesh Lav Rachamim, and Mevakesh Lefonav Yachol Levakesh V'chol Lashon Sheyirtzev, and Mevakesh Shelo Befonav Lo Yivakesh El Lashon HaKodesh. This is based upon a Gemara in Shabbos in the first parak, and around Daf Yud Gimel, where the Gemara says, HaShol Tzrachav Lashon Arami Ein Malachai Hashareis Nizkakim Lav. I'm not going to discuss the theological meaning behind the statement. It's obviously on the surface profoundly disturbing. We pray to God that we don't pray through an intermediary of angels. If you're interested, you can take a look at Rabbi Eger in the Gion HaShas there. Quotes the Ravid and the Tumim Deim, or he refers to Ravid and Tumim Deim. You can read it as a long piece on that. Suffice it to say, for halachic purposes, it's very odd because the Mishnah in Sota in the seventh parak says, amongst the things that are ne'marim b'chol lashon is tefillah. So the question is, how do you resolve these two particular sources? There are three yeshuvim that are cited by the Tur in Or Chaim. One is that there's a difference between Tefillah B'Tzibur and Tefillah B'Yachid. Tefillah B'Tzibur can be in any Lashon. When a Yachid is mispal, it must be in Hebrew. A second interpretation he quotes is that if it's the Tefillah Satzibur, if it's the standard Nusach HaTefillah, that can be in any language, but a private individual's, an ad hoc Tefillah, one that is made up by an individual, should be in Lashon HaKodesh. It's a little counterintuitive because it would be much easier for everybody to say the officially formulated one, which is formulated already in Hebrew, but okay. And the third approach, which I think is the Rush, is that only Lashon Arami, not any other language, and while he doesn't say it, that would fit in with this general polemic, strange enough, that Chazal had against Aramaic. Okay. Anyway, but in this particular case, because the Gemara says that the Shechina is Mirashas of Shechola, the Shechina is present, therefore you don't need the Malachi Asharis to convey the Tefillah, and therefore a person can be Mispalel in any Lashem. The Gesher Chaim points out that when a person is Mispalel in the presence of the Mace, one should do so quietly. For psychological reasons, you don't want to frighten the Chola, because you're standing there praying for him. But obviously, HaKol Lefi HaMakom Lefi HaShah. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch continues. Yechval osa besoch chole Yisrael, sheyomor hamachim yirachim alach besoch chole Yisrael, uveshabbos omer, shabbos yimin lizak refuah krov alavo. In Or Chaim, the Mechaber adds in shivsu b'shalom, and he adds in one other phrase. I think that people are not aware of this. When you do wish someone refuah shleima on Shabbos privately or personally, it is supposed to be Shabbos Yimei Lezok. It's not just part of the Misha Berech L'cholim, but rather you're actually supposed to do that because you're not allowed to engage in tzaka or tefillah for private needs on Shabbos. In fact, in this regard, the practice, I don't suggest you walk into a shul and try changing it, but the practice of reciting Misha Berech L'cholim on Shabbos is very halachically problematic. The Ramban Or Chaim says it's permitted to do so if it's a chola sheish bo sakana, which means imminent sakana. But someone simply who's ill but is not in imminent danger of losing one's life, so it's not appropriate to pray for that person on Shabbos. It's not appropriate to make a Misha Berech L'cholim on Shabbos. And certainly, even for someone who's seriously ill, if the danger is not immediate and imminent, and kavachomer, if they have a little cold or something like that, where the practice got started of reciting this Misha Berach on such a regular basis, I don't know. I don't suggest that you try stopping it, because there are certain, I should have said this at the beginning, Hilchas Avelus is the third rail of the rabbinate. If you mess up on something in Hilchas Avelus, it jeopardizes your standing in a particular location. The Maradasar of Maishul, I believe he's told this story publicly, I know who it's about, said that when he was a mechanech, he didn't attend the Levaya of one of his congregants because it was so far and he couldn't have made it. And Ar HaYom HaZeh, the person has not, it's got to be over 20 years, has not forgiven him for it. At this point, I think they don't even daven in the shul anymore, but that was a gradual process, but literally has not forgiven him for not showing up to Levaya. I'm not saying whether the person is right and whether the rabbi was wrong, or vice versa. I think the rabbi has told us over publicly as a Musar Haskel for Rabbanim, it doesn't matter in this case whether you're right or wrong. In this case, you'd rather be alive than right, and therefore always keep that in mind. So anyway, in that sense, many things, not just Avelus, when they're Avelim, I know this from personal experience of a very ill-fated stint in Gabaos, but trying to tamper with any minhagim even of later on, and things that people do in shuls that they shouldn't do, you know, because somehow it's for yard site and things like that. Be very, very careful when you touch those things. It's very easy to get electrocuted. So here the same thing. It's you know. Personally, I wouldn't ask anybody Mishabech Chacham on Shabbos. I don't put in names, you know, on Shabbos when they now have the communal, Mishabech Chacham. Everybody puts in their own name silently, but it seems to become unfortunately widespread practice. But according to the Shulchan Aruch, according to Halacha, it's really not it's not a good idea. Okay, Siv Zayin, Omer Lo Sheyitein Dato Alan Yanav, Im Hilva O Hifkid. Here also really important, and again this is a very powerful mussar, is that the Geshe Chaim makes the point that people should live their lives keeping their affairs in order generally, not letting things become a mess, because you never know when someone's going to, one person never knows when he or she's going to die, and what kind of a mess they leave behind them. In this particular case, the person is sick already, so we encourage the person to think about, do you have any outstanding financial affairs that you need to take care of? Bechlaulis, and I'll say this to any of you who are already married, and those who are married who have children, the importance of having a will. I don't mean just over the estate. Most of the smicha students who might have children are not leaving such an enormous estate. That's going to be such an issue at this point. But there are issues of directives. If God forbid something happens, who takes care of the child and so on? It's really, really important. It's important not only for smicha students. It's important for all people. It's important to teach your balabatim that there's an ofan misudar, which way one should conduct one's life. This is a particular opportunity for reminder. If you want to, interested, not our topic that I want to spend any time on, but the question of how people accomplish wills in halacha to divide up the assets in a way that are societally appropriate in the context in which we live. Geshe Chaim quotes the Makoros here. Obviously, Alpidin Torah Bechor gets Pishnayim, and daughters get nothing. That has not been the Minag Yisrael, certainly in Ashkenaz, for a very, very long time. The Rama already has this famous idea of Shtar Chatzi Zachar. So there are many, there may be different opinions. But there are various halachic mechanisms by which one can both conform to Yerusha Deraisa and nonetheless make sure that the assets are distributed in a way that are equitable and appropriate in a particular context. The Geshe Chaim quotes a story of a particular Ashir who left behind a large estate, and he decided he was going to do Din Torah, and which meant his daughters got nothing, and the Bechor got Pishnayim. This was in Yerushalayim sometime, I guess, 70, 80 years ago. And the Geshe Chaim writes that after he died, it absolutely tore his family apart. And all the Talmid Chacham said that what a shote he was for actually doing that. He's a shote for letting things follow Din Torah. So basically, when it comes to Yerusha, he says that he forgot the Yerushalmi that says that halacha oka minhag, when it comes to Dinei Mamonos especially. So because Yerusha is automatic, it's something that one should try to arrange a mechanism that conforms to the technical aspects of halacha, which usually relate typically to some type of gift before death or something like that, a moment before one dies. But you can look in the Geshe Chaim for the Mekoros. Okay. It's also important that we tell the person, and this will come up again later in the Vidui in Simen Shin Lamed Ches, that you tell a person to do this, it doesn't mean you're definitely going to die. It just means it's a good reminder, because it's possible we're all eventually going to die, and now that you're sick, it's sort of a good reminder to put your affairs in order, that just in case. Sifches, going back to the theme earlier of not being matriach on the chole, in mevakrin lo lechole me'ayim v'lo lechole ayim v'lo lechole harosh, v'chein lechol chole d'takif le'alma, v'koshe le'dibura. So in the cases where a person is sick and it's uncomfortable for them to have visitors for physical reasons, for psychological reasons, so then it's important not to visit and be matriach on the chole. I would add a comment here, and it's always a very tricky issue. I'm not going to refer to specific cases, but there are situations where people are ill, you know, and the family, you know, often with cases that relate to dementia or disease in that category, and members of the family don't want people, other people, to see their family member in that particular state, which is not always a good idea. Sometimes having the human company, is really important for these people. And one should consider putting aside one's own feelings because of a certain sense of, I don't want to say shame, but in favor of the needs of the chola, him or herself. Yes, Emmanuel.
What if the chola expressly said, like, earlier, and they're like, that in such and such
a situation? So you have to use common sense and figure out what the chola once wanted might not be what the chola wants now, and might not be best for the chola now, and the chola may not experience the tzar anyway, and so you may be making his or her life better, regardless of the earlier tzar. Okay. Now, Ella, what do you, in Ravakar or Sabachanav, you don't visit them actually in their presence. If they need things taken care of, laundry done, cleaning up, you check with the people who are around the mace, which means you're helping the mace without bothering the mace. And I might add, you're also helping those who are helping the mace, often the family members who are under tremendous stress. Also, b'shomen tzar v'vak shel rachamim. You don't have to visit the person and talk to them. You can talk to their relatives who tells you that he or she is in this particular state, and that's again a spur for a person being v'vak yesh rachamim, which is again one of the two major components of the mitzvah b'ikur cholim. In siftes m'vakum chole ol dekolchamim eidar v'shalom. The Shach and the Gur already point out here, even though one could misread the Gemara as saying Mevakrim Cholei Akum Cholei Yisrael, that you do the two together, meaning that when you have to visit one, then if you're visiting people, you don't just say hello to the Jewish patients, you say hello to the non-Jewish patients, but there might not be an inyan if there are no Jewish patients there. So both the Shach and the Gur point out it's not so, that Im is Lav Davka, and it means just as we visit the Cholei Yisrael, so too we visit Cholei Akum. I might add one Heora to that, while the Gemara is based upon the Mishnah, the Braisa at the end of the fifth parak of Gittin, so one might add that in our society in which we live, non-Jews provide for many of the needs of Jews, there may be not just a question of darkei shalom, but a basic societal obligation of reciprocity, that those who provide for our needs, we have the same obligation to provide for their needs. Not because of darkei shalom, not because they're going to hate us, but because it's really part of a social contract.
Rabbi, do the same halachas apply to non-Jew as well?
Why not? In other words, why would you? Which specific halachos? You won't say b'shar chol Yisrael probably in your formulation,
but you have to daven for them as well.
So technically speaking, on that level, no. In other words, unless it's on both grounds that because it's not the technical mitzvah, so there may not be an obligation, and I'm not sure that other members of the community are mispalo. But on the other hand, why not? If you're being mispalo for home, you can mispalo for them too. It's a nice thing to do. Okay, and finally, Sif Yud, which again deals with some of the specific issues of a choli. The choli may ayim ein ha'ish mishamesh es ha'isha, aval ha'isha mishamesh es ha'ish. The Mechaber seems to have understood this as a din. Not the Mechaber, the Levush. It's quoted in the Beis Yosef. That this has to do with the fact, this is a little bit like a din in Hilchas Avel as well, certain dinim in the first Sugya and Subas, which is that when the man is strong, even if the woman is sick, he might push her into having an inappropriate sexual relationship. Whereas if the man is weak and the woman is strong, the reverse is not going to happen. The problem with that interpretation is that all the Achronim point out, the Shach and the Taz and others, is that that shouldn't then distinguish between Choli Me'ayim and other kinds of illnesses. That should be true by every illness. The usual understanding of the Choli Me'ayim is that Cholei Me'ayim are constantly, going to the bathroom, having to uncover themselves, and therefore the concern of an ish being mishamish as a isha is that it's going to be megara the yetzahara, as opposed to other kinds of choli, and because they require assistance in going to the bathroom, whereas other kinds of choli don't require that same kind of assistance or same frequency, and therefore there isn't the problem of, in that case, of an ish being mishamish and isha. Discussion Hilchos Nida, but it deals with one specific case, not for the topic here, which is Baal and Ishto, which may have its own unique set of dinim, unique set of harchakos, but that you can look in Simen Kuf Tzadi Hei in Yeridea. Adam?
According to that second reasoning within this understanding, is it a problem for a male to be a nurse who's being taken care of? I mean, if it's
no. No, it's not.
Why not?
You mean, I'm sorry, in that case. So firstly, I didn't understand that case. So the truth is, in most of these cases, handling that aspect of the chole, most of the time people are going to want a member of the same gender to be doing it. But there, it's probably no different than a doctor. It's umam b'umanusay tarit. Here you're not talking about someone who's a professional.
But a doctor is generally not dealing with the nitty-gritty stuff, whereas a nurse...
A doctor is dealing... The whole point is you're seeing someone uncovered. A doctor is seeing someone uncovered just as much. The doctor isn't dealing with all the nitty-gritty stuff, which would be totally, alienating, but, in some ways would be less of a concern of a Yetzer Hara. So, but I think primarily speaking, obviously it's optimal from probably every vantage point, including the human psychological vantage point, not to have that situation, but al-pidin, I don't think it's different than a doctor. I think it's uman b'umano setara. This is dealing with someone specifically who's not an uman. It's not their job in doing so. Okay. Until recently, it was an issue in terms of the direction of Ishanisha because most nurses were female, but that's something that may be somewhat changing. Okay, and Rama adds, Yeshom Shemisha Shlachola Beveso Yelech Etzochacham Shavir Shivakish Alav Rachamim, which is perfectly fine. You see this in the Gemara all over the place, especially with Hanina Mendoza, who was one of the miracle workers. I just want to, since a story came my way this morning, which is so profoundly disturbing, it is very important. It is very important to realize that there are people for whom people go to brachas to who are misguided at best and charlatans at worst. A particular story that came up was someone I know whose husband is very sick. He is some makubal. He visited makubal, and there's this woman who told her that that she really should take on minhag tzniyus. And she really, cover all her hair and whatever else. And this woman said to her, and it's a guarantee that he'll get better. And I think she's smart enough and well-educated enough to understand that is not an appropriate way to talk. Because there are multiple concerns here. One, and as my wife made clear to tell this woman, no matter what she says, don't think that the reason why your husband is sick is because you wear pants or because you don't do this, you don't do that. And number two, you need to understand that there's no such thing as a guarantee. And there are people who provide all sorts of false hope, which is inappropriate. It's one thing to try to, boost someone's spirits. It's another thing to mislead them. And I'm not even talking about people who take money for giving brachos. So while it may be perfectly appropriate to seek out someone who has a stronger connection with the Ribono Shel Olam, which, by the way, when you look in the Gemara, you'll see it's not necessarily the biggest Talmud Chacham. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the famous Gemara brachos, he sent to Hanina Mendoza to be mispal, even though he was a much bigger Talmud Chacham. But he said, he gave that mashal that Hanina Mendoza is like the person who's an Eved Meshamish Naimelech, as opposed to he who might have been a greater officer, but he didn't have the same interconnection with the king. I mean, there are certain people who are more attuned to spirituality and tefillah than others. It's not necessarily a big Talmud Chacham. Sometimes it's someone who's not. Okay. I should also add in this context that those of a more Lithuanian sensitivity do not probably buy into the Rama. I'm sure some of you know the famous story about the student who asked Rav Amital for a bracha. And Rav Amital said, Ani lo rebbe v'ata lo tapuach. But I think one has to be very careful about this. One has to be very careful about not thinking this is a cure-all because it often preys upon people in their most vulnerable times. So one has to be very careful. Finally, the Rambam says, "V'chein nagu levarach cholim beis akneses likro lahem shem chadash to give mashini Hashem." The Geshur Chaim talks about some of the dina mashini Hashem. I forget who. Either the Beis Yosef or the Darkei Moshe quotes from one of the Rishonim the nusach mashini Hashem. I'm sure you can find it. Maybe in the RCA Madrich, you'll find it in the Svarim. And finally, kishin Hashem koreg zardino based upon the Gemara Rosh Hashanah. And finally, nicham avelim kodem levikro cholim. The reason for that is that it's surprising to me, actually, but Nicham Avelim is Kavod HaChayim and Kavod HaMesim, whereas Bikur Cholim is only Kavod HaChayim. The Shach quotes the Bach, who says that that if you cannot do both, then you do Tanchum Avelim first, but if it's Efshel HaChayim Shem, then you do Bikur Cholim first. Again, I don't really understand why. If the concern is that it's Sakana, it's Ikoch Nefesh, then of course you should do Bigur Cholim before Nichom Avel. Okay. Simen Shin Lamed Vav. Dinei Harofei. The Ramban points out that there are two reasons why one might have thought that engaging, that going to medical school and becoming a doctor is problematic. Adam, if I'm looking your direction, it's not because I'm thinking only of you. And number one is that the potential danger for harming a patient in the process of trying to healing them, and why does one want to get involved? And number two is a theological concern, which is one allowed to engage in refuah? Many of you know the drasha, and they probably knew already, but if you look at the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, Asa, so appropriately named, was criticized for going to the doctors, right? He sought the rofim and he didn't seek God. So apparently, I'm not going to discuss the theology at any length now, it's not the time, but for these two reasons, one might have thought that it's inappropriate to engage in medicine, and that's why Chazal tell us that absolutely not. Nasna Torah Rishus L'Rofei L'Rapos, the Taz talks about why is it even Rishus, it's a mitzvahi. It actually is a commandment and obligation. It's in the category of saving life. If one would make a good doctor, and there aren't enough other people who will make good doctors, again, it wasn't in those days, it wasn't the question of getting into medical school, it was a question of taking the time to learn the trade and then actually practice it. If one was capable of doing so and didn't do so, it was as if he was spilling blood. Then, even if there is someone else who can do the refuah shalom and akol adam zochelis rapos. Not all doctors are created equal, and some doctors will do a better job with some patients and some other doctors with other patients. Umiyu lo yisasek berefuah ela imkein hu baki. First requirement is you have to be an expert in medicine to practice it. Velo yehi sham gadol mimenu, and you can't have someone who's a greater doctor there than you, and obviously what this doesn't mean that if you're not the biggest doctor, you're not allowed to open a practice, because obviously, if there's only one biggest doctor, then the best doctor, so he's not going to be able to treat everybody. What it does imply, however, is the importance, and we'll talk about that in a moment, of consultation. If he ends up harming someone, when a better doctor would have done a better job. If you didn't receive a p'tur from Beis Din, it's like a dayan, and didn't take rishus. If a doctor doesn't receive rishus from Beis Din, so he is obligated, he's chayav nezek when he's a mazik b'shogeg. Afilu mubaki, even if he's an expert, in ripa b'shus Beis Din, if he did it b'shus Beis Din, he took official permission, he's licensed by Beis Din, v'ta'a v'hizik potam edini adam chayav b'din shemayim, v'mheimis v'noda lo sheshaga go lal yado. If he in fact makes an error, so then he is obligated only b'dinei shemayim to pay. He is obligated b'dinei shemayim, even though Beis Din won't force him, in the context of killing someone, so he's chayav to be gola. I must emphasize, this doesn't mean a doctor who has a bad outcome. Obviously, doctors follow certain protocol, and sometimes it just doesn't work. That's not called ta'a. Sometimes there's simply no way to know that a particular treatment isn't going to work and may even cause harm. Yes?
Does this mean that if he didn't have the shusha based in and he did make a mistake and actually was broke with a cola, he's not high on anything?
Well, if he was successful.
He was successful, but he didn't have a shusha.
No, but we only, patients only sue for malpractice when there's a bad outcome. Right? If you misadministered the wrong dose, then he had a miraculous cure. So I'm sure you never know in this day and age, but sure you won't get sued. So in this case, there's no nesek to talk about. In other words, we're talking about the chiyuv here. If you obviously didn't kill the patient, so there's nothing to talk about galus, and the chiyuv of tashlumin is only if you did harm. Okay. In this context, the Geshur Chaim, I don't know if anybody said this before, a very clever pshat. You know, the Mishnah in Kedushin at the end says, Tov Shabarofim L'Gehenna. So the question is, why exactly is that? I know that the pre-med students don't like to hear that. So the Geshur Chaim suggests is that if a person thinks that he's Tov Shabarofim and he doesn't have to consult with anybody else, that's Tov Shabarofim L'Gehenna. The person has to know that when you do things that you have to consult with others, and certainly if the other's greater than you, and the truth is even a gadol, it's kedai to consult with a katan. Yes, right.
Does this practice today, doctors have to receive rishus from Beis Din, or is it assumed that if you're licensed?
I don't think doctors receive. There's no Beis Din to whom to me note the rishus anyway. There's any kind of jurisdiction. Adam?
Why should you rishus Beis Din if you have rishus of Torah in practice?
No, the Torah allows the practice of medicine. The Torah allows Dayanus as well. You're allowed to practice if you're Bucky, technically. The only thing is, if you're Mazik B'Shogeg, so you're Chayef to pay. It's very nice. But Adam Wad La'olam, Echad Mezid, Echad Shogeg, Echad Onus, Echad Ratzon. So it's nice. What based in the licensing process does, aside from letting other people perhaps know that you're qualified, is it Zupatur, where the Torah ordinarily was Mechayev you. Ari?
Is it basically assuming that therefore, if you were to be Toa, you know, given Rishus based in, there would be bonus, that would be outside the...
The Shulchan Aruch is clearly speaking of a case where you made an error, where it's clear you made an error after the fact, and it means an error that you could have anticipated. So you're part of B'dini Adam because that was what the point of based in giving your Rishus are, but since you made an error that was preventable, so you should know that B'dini Shemayim, you're still chayev. Now, the reason why Beis Din exempts people is because you want to, because it's the same with malpractice, right?
Right. Because according to the Ramban, it says that when we say other mulo, then it even means the onus. I mean, it's not just even like
it means preventable. Right? It means preventable, obviously. If it wasn't preventable, if it wasn't foreseeable, so what else do you want the person to do? Right? We don't say that you're mechayev to avoid being shofech damim, to try to heal. And now, when you have the worst possible outcome, even though you did what was the proper protocol, you're chayav b'diyei shamayim. No, that the Ramban doesn't mean that. He just means to say that in situations where it could have been foreseen, and you realize you really made an error, you made the wrong choice. Not in hindsight, but even before the fact, you should have made a different decision. That's what they're talking about. Okay. More importantly, harofei aser litos schara chachma v'halimud. He's not allowed to take payments. This is the solution to the healthcare crisis, of course. Okay? That undermines the solution. So apparently, basically, someone who knows how to heal is not allowed to take money for that knowledge. Just as someone who knows how to teach Torah, now I'm getting myself in trouble, is not allowed to take money for teaching that. Right? We take money for grading, you know, for younger kids, babysitting, and all sorts of that, for the paperwork, but not for the teaching of Torah, because and it applies not only to the knowledge of Torah, it applies to all knowledge. So that's why, really, in theory, a doctor is not allowed to take schar for his medical school bills or for his not current knowledge, but rather for the tircha and the batala, because he obviously would be doing other things. Yes?
Theoretically, this means that a doctor who's better than another doctor shouldn't charge more, just like theoretically.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's correct. So obviously that's not the way medicine is practiced today. But although it might have been closer to that 100 years ago, it might have been much closer to that. Now, of course, despite the din, obviously there's some doctors who might feel, even back then, that they really knew a lot more and they were really good doctors, and guess what? So if you want to live, you're willing to pay a lot for that. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Mishi yesh lo samonim, v'chaveiro chola v'tzarech lahem, osur lo lahalos b'dameim yosem en haroi. So you're not allowed to overcharge for medicines, not like the pharmaceutical companies. I know they have to recoup their investments, but nonetheless, there's a kitzah. And therefore, you're not allowed to charge more. Even if you give me the thing, I say, I promise I'll pay you $200 for something that should cost $2. So after the fact, I'm not chayav to pay. This is based upon the Gemara in Yevamos, that was on the Makoros, that if a person it was both by a case of chalitza, which the Gemara makes a distinction, and here and in a case where a guy is running away for his life, the enemy is chasing him, and he hops on the ferry, and he says, take me across the river, and the guy says, okay, but that's going to cost you. And he overcharges him, and he can promise him, I'll pay $100, and if the proper ferry crossing fee is only $10, that's all he has to pay. It's because you're not allowed to overcharge for the basic service. However, the Shulchan Aruch says, Avalim hisna mischar harofe harbe. If he made a condition to pay the not for the tangible stuff, and that's a takanas chachamim, by the way, the idea that when you have certain types of goods that you can't overcharge for them, we're not allowed to be enforceable. So that's a general thing. However, if the rofe said, "I'm charging you for my knowledge," chayev liken, though he has to pay if that's what they agree at the outset. Shechachmaso macharlo ve'ein lo damin. Basically, I'm selling you my great wisdom, and that is valueless. And on some level, it's correct. In other words, if I have something that you really need, then guess what? It's worth a lot of money. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. There is a dissenting opinion amongst the Rishonim. Beis Yosef quotes it that, in fact, even in this case, you're only chayev to pay. The reason probably they disagree is based upon the question of why it is a question the Gror points out here, that the Nimuke Yosef in the 12th parak of Yevamos asks, he quotes the Ritva as asking against the Ramban. This dinner was the Ramban's dinner. The Ritva says he thinks it's wrong because you're mechuyev to heal someone else. So you're not entitled to that money. There's a mitzvah, just as there's a mitzvah hashavas aveda, there's a mitzvah hashavas gufa. If I have to return your property, I certainly have to restore your health. So that's why, so the Ritva says, he thinks that in fact you're patur from paying because you were obligated to do the mitzvah in the first place and therefore you're not entitled to the money. The Ramah here responding, and that's what the Gra points out, the Ramah is responding to that challenge of the Ritva. The Ramah here writes, "Afal pishiyesh mitzvah alav l'raposo." Nonetheless, still you're chayav to pay. Sheko mitzvah sase the ramya akule alma. If it's not my specific obligation, anybody's obligated to do it. Nim nizdam le'echad v'lo ratzel l'kayme ela b'mamon the ein motzian hamamon miyado v'lo mafkiyim miyado achiv shelo should be. In other words, in this case, not only if he paid the doctor's fee, but even if he hasn't paid me yet and I healed him, he's obligated to pay me that money. He Vager points out that when it comes to the Salamonim, if the person paid already there, you're not actually now chayav to refund the money. But in this case, even though you haven't paid the doctor yet, you're still mechuyev to pay the doctor. Ari, you had a question?
Yeah, the chachma that he's charging him for here is technically the chachma that he's not allowed to.
Correct. Correct. That is the chachma is not his great wisdom in medicine. Josh, question?
No, that's my question. Yeah. How is he able to charge him?
So it's usur. It's usur, but nonetheless, you're chayev in dinei mamonos. Right? If a person has undertaken a particular action or obligation on your behalf, and you agreed to pay X, so even if he wasn't supposed to do it, you still chayev to pay? Yeah. Okay. Any questions about Simon Shin Lamed Vav? Okay. Shin Lamed Zayin. Chola shemes lomes modin oso. Shema titaref emodino so shema titaref dato alav vein korin chaluko vein bochen maspidim panav shelo yishaber libo mashtiken as menachem in panav. So if someone has a relative, whether or not he technically has the sick shiva or not, let's say it's one of his krovim who died, you're not supposed to tell him lest it cause him more anguish and potentially hasten his death and cause his illness to take a turn for the worse. The fact that the Shulchan Aruch says vein korin chaluko obviously means in a case, I mean, Taz points this out, and in a case where he found out about the death, so even though he knows, you don't do the external symbols of Avelus to tear his clothing and cry in his presence, or give him hesped, because that's simply going to remind him and sort of drive the point home more and potentially weaken him. Josh, a question?
Oh, yeah, I remember my question. Let's say he has a summing, and he's a bucky, he's the biggest in town, and he's the only one with the true folk. So if you go to him to be able to get the true folk, and nobody else has it. So technically,
you mean you're buying the knowledge of how to mix it as opposed to not the materials,
that's
the raw materials.
That's obligation as well, anyways.
What's that? That's part of his obligation, but there would be chachmasa mocharla.
But there's no other place of where I can get this trufa, and so I'd have to pay it for any extraneous price.
No. The raw materials, you're certainly not allowed to overcharge him. You're not allowed to charge him for the knowledge on how to mix the spices either. But if you did, that's chachmas amachar, though, I think. It's everybody's obligation to heal him. When the Ramah says that it's a mitzvah muto kaladam, it's just because I'm the one with the greatest knowledge doesn't mean the mitzvah's only come to me. I may be the only one who's capable of doing that.
But you're also the only one who has the truth, though.
I understand that, but again, that's it depends whether it's the raw materials, which is subject to rule number one, which is sam ranim, or whether it's the chachma, it's the knowledge of how to put them together, in which case it's not. Okay. I should add that Chazal did not generally look kindly upon the idea of people holding knowledge to themselves. There's a story, I think, in Shabbos, Rabbi Yochanan, who needed to, who had its refuah, and this matrona had the recipe, and she wouldn't tell anyone. And he said to her, "But you know, Shabbos is coming, and we need to make it before, so you have to tell me how to make it." And he said, "I swear that la'la di Yisrael lo megalina, I won't reveal it to the God of Israel." And after she told it to him, he did it, he took care of himself, and then he announced it publicly, and she challenged him. "What did you do? You swore you wouldn't do it." He said, "I promised I wouldn't reveal it to God, but I'd reveal it to everybody else." Now, that seems like a very underhanded behavior, but it's more understandable in light of the fact that the idea that knowledge is kept to a person himself and not shared with others is somehow anathema. There's a notion that knowledge, be it Torah or other knowledge, is a gift from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and it belongs to all of humanity. Just because you discovered it first, you deserve the credit, and now share it with everybody else. Okay. Anyway, so Shin Lamed Zayin is pretty pashut. It's common sense. Someone was commenting to me this morning about the plethora of svarim written on very small topics. So soon we'll have a book that I don't know if there is one, like a 400-page book on Bikur Cholin. And I cringe when I heard that because I said, there are principles in Shulchan Aruch, and it's all common sense. They started to tell me, yes, someone said, they asked the Shaila whether you can do Bikur Cholam on the phone. So I just said, well, why not? After all, if you look at the reasons for Bikur Cholam, they apply there as well. So he said, yeah, but someone writes, you have to be careful because you might wake the Chola when he's sleeping if you call on the phone. And I'm thinking to myself, you need a sefer written for this? We're in a lot of trouble if the people don't have access to the fifth chelek of Shulchan Aruch. Okay. Simen Shin Lamed Ches is the issue of vidui. Nata lamos, if a person has taken a turn for the worse there, leaning towards dying, omrim lo hisvade. The omrim lo, we tell him you should say the vidui. The omrim lo, but we don't want to unnerve him, so we say harbe hisvade v'lamesu, v'harbe shelo hisvade v'lamesu, v'vizchar shatam hisvade atachai. Okay, so there are many people who failed to take the opportunity and die before they could do vidui, and vice versa. L'chol misvade yishol chelek ma'ba, v'men yochol misvades v'piv yisvade v'lifo. If he doesn't know the vidui at all, the Rama adds tehei kapara misasi tehei kapara kalavonosai. Those lines, by the way, I'll just say this once, the lines in parentheses, the sources are not the Rama, but the lines in parentheses in the Rama font, I believe, are the Rama. The chol elu advarim in omer lo b'fnam arts lo b'fnei yashim lo b'fnei tanim shema yifku v'yishbur libo. Okay, you don't say it in front of the people who will not retain their composure because we're afraid of unnerving the chola. And then the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Seder Avidu. You can read it. The one point of note here is the order of Chatasi Avisi Pashati. Those of you who learn Yoma know that there's the same issue when it comes to the Vida and Yom Kippur. Our practice is that of the Chacham, not of Rabbi Meir. I should say that of the Chacham, not of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, say, Avon Vafesha V'chata'ah. And we don't recite in that order because Chazal understand that Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah was that Avon Vafesha should be treated like chata, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu should treat our donos as if they were shgagos. Okay, finally, one very, very important simon, which I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on, but obviously this touches upon some of the major, major contemporary issues, spell, brain death, end-of-life issues, and all those sorts of things, really relate to the issue of start in the simon of Goses. Now, the Shulchan Aruch here says, HaGoses HaReyu Kechai L'chol Dvarav. A Goses is treated, it's as if he is alive, really for all purposes in Halacha. What are those purposes in Halacha? So here, if you look in Maseches Smachos, so the Mishnah there says, Zokif L'yibum U'potem en Ayibum. So for the purposes of levirate marriage, of whether or not he would pater his mother from needing Yibum, whether he'd be Zokik, his brother's wife, Yibum. So he's alive. Umachil Truma Posa Manat Truma. Vinochel Manchil for Yerusha purposes. And there are nafkaminas, what will matter whether he dies first or after his Melrish dies or not. Pirish Menu Ever Kever Menachai. Basar Kebasar Menachai. It's not treated like Ever Menhames or Basar Menhames, which is much more. Basar Menhames is much more Hamor. Basar Menachai is Tahar. Basar Menhames is. Basar Menachai is Tahar. Basar Menhames is Mitami Ba'ol Bekazayas. Vizurkin Al Yado Dam Chatasa Vedam Ashamo at Shah Shayamas. You can throw the dam of his Karbanas too if he's still alive, of an Asham Menachantas, which only come Lechapara. And Kapara, there is no Kapara after Misa. Obviously, most of these dinim aren't relevant, Bisman Hazeh, which is why here the Shach already fills in. He's Kechai L'chol Davar, so firstly, you're not allowed to do anything, Shach and Sivkat Anach, anything which might be Mekarev is Misa. The Ran states that if he can still give a get, presumably because he wants to prevent his wife from acquiring Chalitza, and he can give away property. And the Ran also writes, and we don't pass this way, that the Kohen is allowed to enter that particular location, even though Rogue Goses and Mamisa. We'll see later in Shulchan Aruch, we don't pass in that way. We assume that it's usher for Kohen, not only cannot enter a bias in which there's a mace, but even where there's someone who is a Goses, a Kohen is not allowed to enter because Rogue Goses and Mamisa. Okay. Now, the Shulchan Aruch here states that because of the way the Shulchan Aruch presents it here is the purpose of describing as alive means that you can't do anything to him that you do to dead people. Many of these things which are done primarily to preserve the mace and as either cover a mace or actually to slow down the decomposition and preparations for the funeral itself, for the burial itself. So the Mechaber says, in Koshu L'chayav, what they would do is they close up the mouth. At some point during this Zman, I'm going to have someone, I'm not sure who yet, will come and present the Tara process, how it's done in detail. But one of the things we do is we don't like to leave the mace's mouth open. So we do not tie up his mouth. Ein sochin oso. We don't start to wash the body. Ve'in madichan oso, osachem with oil. Ve'in madichan oso, we don't wash them with water. Ve'in pokikin es nekava, we don't seal up, you know, the orifices of the body. The purpose of that generally is to prevent nivul ames, because once a person has died, the muscles that hold in things, particularly the intestines and the bladder, no longer function, and therefore it can the possibility of leakage is very real. So they would be pokeik the nekava. That's a kavar ames. Ve'in shomtin hakar mitachav. You're not allowed to remove the pillow from underneath, and you would normally do that to put them on cold surface to slow down decomposition. The same thing, you don't put them on the floor, any of these surfaces which are cooler and preserve the body a little longer. All things that somehow, again, supposed to have that effect. You don't announce his death amongst the ayaros, for starters, because you don't want him to hear. You probably also want to avoid a Dewey beats Truman scenario. Ve'en sochrin chalilin. Okay. Ve'en sochrin chalilin umekononos. You don't hire the flutes, any professional wailers. We don't usually do that today at Jewish funerals, but ve'en ma'amtsin, there are two nuschos here. Some have ma'atzmin and ayin tzadi mem, some have ayin mem tzadi. Ein ma'amtsin einav achetetze nafsho, not until he dies. Maseches quotes the mashal of Rabbi Meir that a person who's a ghost is like a ner metaftef, and if you move him, you may cause the ner to go out earlier than it would have gone out. So it's like shofech damim. You don't tear kriya yet. The reason you don't tear kriya, aside from the psychological impact, is because you're not yotze with kriya. We'll see in the next siman and shin mem, probably tomorrow or the next day, that if you tear kriya before yitzias neshama more than toch kedei diba before, you have to tear kriya again because you're not yotze. V'lo cholzen, you don't do chalitzas kasef. V'lo maspidin alav, you don't start giving the hesped. You can just imagine, you start giving a hesped, someone's a goses, and then he chooses to interject his comments into your hesped. V'lo machnisin imo aron labayis, you don't bring an aron into the bayis, ache yomus, until he dies. Alpidin, the Achronim point out, is that you could build an aron outside of the bayis. Here it's for the psychological impact upon the mace himself. Vein poschan ala b'tzidduk adin ache tzeitin asho. You don't start tzidduk adin until he actually dies. If you look in the smak, I forget who quotes the smak here. Must be one of the, I thought it was the shach who quotes it. Here the practice is mentioned that as soon as the mace dies, you tear kriya and you do tzedek adin. Today the practice, later in Shulchan Aruch, you see that kriya must be done before achi yistom. It's not clear, stimas agolos, stimas penei mace. Our practice is not to do the kriya generally right at the time of yitzias neshama, but rather to do it later, at some point, usually right before the levaya, you know, right before the public aspects of the hesped, that's usually when we do kriya. It certainly must be done before they bury the mace. So that's what the Mechaber says. You don't do any of these things actually teitzin asha, either because it entails moving the mace, which would be a violation of shvichas damim, or because it involves undermining the mace psychologically. The Rama adds, however, yesh omim din chotzin lo kever ava pisha'eno imo babayis ad achar shayamos. This idea that you're not supposed to dig until after he dies is because the fear that he might not die, and you're not going to bury him in that grave. And the Rama continues, v'asur lachto shum kever lios pasuach ad lamachar shelo yikru ba mace ba'osur ayom. I might have thought that the sakana is a bar brishas harabim, but Rehuda Chassid has this idea that if you dig the grave, and this guy doesn't die, well, someone else will have to die in order to be buried in it. Okay, today it's not really so relevant because we generally don't. Firstly, it doesn't take so much effort to dig it because they take a backhoe and they just dig it out very quickly. One note should be made here: this din about not being chotzev kever, even if one is makbid for the tshuva that Rashi that the Rama quotes, is only for someone who's a goses. It's not true for a bari. It's perfectly appropriate. Today we don't dig out crypts. We're not chotzev firm that way. But they used to do that. They dig into stone, and people would do that often long before they actually died. And that can be done by a bari. It's just the practice is not to do it by a goses. Now the Rama adds, going back to the first point, v'chein osur ligram l'meis sheyamus mehera. You're not allowed to do anything to hasten the death of the person. That obviously, as you see, is really fundamentally when you do something in active fashion alone.
But the halakha that you just brought up regarding the digging the grave, what about buying a plot?
So again, you usually, again.
A bari usually.
Well, the truth is for a bari usually, yes. It's a good idea as a bari that you should purchase your basement apartment. But I don't know. You've never heard that? In New Zealand, they don't have that thing? What's that? That's an interesting question. Okay. Would the same din apply? Presumably, the concern of Rabbi Huda Chassid would not apply in that particular case. You don't want to do it in earshot of the chola, because again, it might undermine him. But if somebody else is burying, you know, buying the plot, so there's no open grave. There's nothing, you know, more miuchad. All you've done is bought a piece of land. Okay. So the Ramah says that you're not allowed to do anything to hasten the death of the person. Kigom Yishu Goseis Man Aruch V'lo Yocholi Pari. He can't die. Asur Lahashmit Hakar Vakeses Mitachtav Mikach She'omrim She'ish Notzos Mitzatz Ofo She'gormin Zeh. People say that there are certain feathers that prevent the neshama from leaving, so you're not allowed to take the pillow out from under him. And here the Acharon point out, it's really not because you're hastening the death. You're hastening the death because you're moving him. V'chein lo yisizenem unkom, or you can't move him. V'chein asur lasum maftechos beis hakneses tachas rosho. You can't put the keys of the shul underneath his head. Kidei shiipari. I don't think anybody would do that today anyway. Avalam yesham davar shegarin ikur v'tzias hanefesh. If there's something that's preventing his neshama from being yotzei, kigon sheyesh samach la'oso bayis, kol dofei kigon chotev eitzim, o sheyesh melech al l'shono. And that apparently the shach says entails really not even moving him, removing the salt thing from his tongue. So davar shegarin ve'elu ma'ach v'tzias hanefesh muter lasir mishum te'im b'zeh masek klal el hashemesir hamoneya. This is generally, I'm not going to discuss the issues here because there are a variety of opinions, but this certainly expressed by the Ramah here is a notion that one does not have to take every step to continue to preserve life. And even though in this case, by leaving the salt there or by continuing to be dofek with the hammer, you continue to preserve his life, that is not an appropriate thing to do in this case. So how far one goes with this, what kinds of treatments one can refuse passively, if one thinks that there's certain things that a person always have to provide, there are various opinions. The only thing I will say is that those who would state that one has to take all heroic measures in all circumstances, I think are A, halachically wrong, and B, incredibly misguided. And I think there are numerous gemaras and the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch that makes that amply clear. But the fundamental distinction is that one is between active and passive. That's sort of the core distinction, nothing under any circumstances may be done to actively hasten the death of the mace. When I say active, it means doing something to the mace or something that's attached, maybe even attached to the mace, as opposed to simply not providing something that's there or removing something which is not really coming in any way in contact with the mace. Okay. In the Avelis curriculum, we're supposed to also mention, I don't know what we're supposed to do, brain death and end-of-life issues, so I just touched up a little bit on the end-of-life issues, and you know brain death is machlokas, and I'm not going to discuss it now because there's plenty that's been written on it. I don't need to add anything to the discussion. Okay. Sif Beis, very important. Halacham Yishe Omer Lo Re'inu Krocha Goseis Hayom Shloshe Yamin Tzarech Lezabal Lav. If they tell someone that your karov was already goseis 3 days before, you sit shiva. This is a complicated issue for one reason, which is, well, first let me just point out, the Shach notes here that when we say a gosis is a chaylech odavar, it's when he's gosis befanecha. But since Rov gosis in Lamisa, you can follow Rov and assume, if you're not there, that he's died within 3 days. The only complicating factor here is a situation where the man who's a gosis has a wife who wants to remarry. And the problem here is that you cannot normally allow a woman to remarry on the basis of a rov. That's the whole din of mayim she'in la himself. It's a din d'rabana, but nonetheless, it's very real. So some would say that, we'll talk about it later, I don't remember which siman is going to come up again later, but that is an issue. We might not allow the wife to sit shiva, or if there's a wife in question, if it's a question of marrying, we might have anybody sit shiva, because the concern if people see them sitting shiva, they will conclude from that she is also permitted to remarry, and in this circumstance, she's absolutely not permitted to remarry. It's a Beis Shmuel and Eben Ezer who makes the claim based upon this, but the Acharonim all reject that point and assume that this din is no different than Mayim Shein Lam Sof. Shulchan Aruch continues, Omer Tzidukah Dinah Mitzias Neshama Uchshah Megiya L'dayin MS. Oh, it's here. Korea HaOvel. This should be quoted from the Smak, I believe. No, here. Sefer Sefer HaTrumos? No. Where is this? He quotes it from the Ramban. I thought it was in the Smach. Okay. Although the Smach is the one later. So anyway, so here again, this is not our practice to tear right then, but you do recite Dianemis. And here I should just point out I know that people today are very reluctant to use Shema Malchus, but it's not only the Krov or the Mace who make the bracha of Dayan Emes, but Asher Bracha Hashem Elokeinu Melech on Dayan Emes. Anybody who's really feels affected and moved by the death is supposed to make the bracha of Dayan Emes with Shema Malchus. There are people today who think that the bracha is Baruch Dayan Emes. That is not the bracha. That is a non-bracha bracha. The real bracha is with Shema Malchus, and if a person is in such a situation where it's someone they know, someone they feel, where really they feel tsar, so you make a bracha with Shema Malchus. Okay, Sif Dalid, and this maybe didn't need to be said because it's common sense. Kevin Shinata Adam Lamos in Rashan the Parmi Menu Kadesh Lotetsi Nashu Yechidi. The person who's in the throes of death, one should not leave their side. Again, this is partially psychological, it's not psychological terms to hasten your death, but in leaving them in an awful psychological state as they're dying. Finally, Sif Hey, Minhod Lishbo Kalamayim Shu'ufim Shibishkunas Ameis. The practice was to spill out all the mayim which was in kelim. This does not mean mayim. I mean, it is true it's mayim shuvim versus mei mikvah, but it's not a question of the din of mayim shuvim, but water that was drawn in kelim that are in the shchuna of the mace. I'm not going to discuss this at any length, the details of what the shchuna are. Here I am from the school of the Aruch HaShulchan and a step further. There are two reasons that are given for this din. What some achronim will say, the Aruch HaShulchan is probably not the only one, is that the real reason we do this is to announce the death of the person without having to say so. Today it's totally irrelevant because if you spill out the water in your sink, no one will know that you spilled out the water. If you spill it out in the gutter, they'll assume that you don't want to spill it into your sink. And the way people will find out today, for better or worse, is because they'll get an email or they'll get a phone message that so-and-so was niftar. Even though we have this idea, motzi dibah hukasiyah, at least today, you don't have to repeatedly state it, then you can make one written or similar announcement and everybody knows you don't have to be the one who's announcing the death of someone. In which case, it's totally irrelevant today. There is a second inyan, which is that the Malach HaMaves, drops a tipa of sam in the waters that are around when he kills someone. Even the Gesher HaChaim, who tends to be more machbid, quotes from, I think it's his maybe grandfather of Shmuel Salant, I don't know if I misread the abbreviation, who said that reason is only relevant in the house of the mace itself. It's not relevant in any of even in the houses that are around it. And so even there would only be relevant in that particular situation. And they all say, many of the Chorim say, if the kelim are covered, so that's not a problem either. The truth is today, given all those conditions, even if one were concerned about that, it's almost a non-existent concern, because we don't have that much water. We take our water from the tap, so that's not an issue. And most of the time, if we have water or something like that in the refrigerator, it's covered. So if you're talking about an open cup of water, I guess that's a concern. I don't want to say there's nobody who's terribly mocked about this today, but I don't think in our community too many people are mocked. One might argue it's for lack of knowledge, but I might argue even if it's for lack of knowledge, it's a good practice. I don't think one needs to be concerned about that. But again, there are some who are so machmir, they said if you took the water and you cook something with it, you can't eat that. This is the discussion, what about Mayim Shalanu, if you had set it up maybe for Pesach, or maybe not even, whether or not you have to spill that out. There they say you don't have to spill out Mayim Shalanu. Ramah quotes that you have to spill Mayim Shalanu. Okay. Anyway, but that's where this minhag came about, this minhag of spilling out the water came from, for one of these two reasons. Any questions? Okay. So please remember again tomorrow morning. Again, those of you who haven't given me your email address, please give it to me. Tomorrow's shir is going to be, we said, 11:30 to accommodate those of you taking contemporary halacha at 1 o'clock, whatever it is. Okay. Adam, is this the other one?